Off top, the Broncos won 11-10. How come they didn't win 11-10? Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
All right. That was a game. Like, I kind of enjoyed that game. I got to be honest. That Monday night game, it felt like I got in a time machine. They were, like, protecting the ball. There were no turnovers to that, like, game-ending interception. There was no fumbles. It was just running back. It, like, felt like early 90s football. I kind of liked it. Just quarterbacks under center the whole game, headed off to the running backs. And the biggest plays in the game were big runs by Zeke, well, mostly Pollard, big runs by Saquon. Yeah. And I think Cooper Rush completed a couple passes when he needed to complete them. But I think I have to let go of my confirmation bias. And the Cowboys are not bad. They're actually really good. Like, I thought they were going to be terrible before the season started. And then it was, like, reaffirmed by them having a really putrid performance in week one against the Bucks. But the Bucks' defense is great. And the Cowboys are pretty good because their defense is also pretty damn great. At least that front is hellacious, and it makes life easier for everyone. So just an all-around impressive win. Can I pitch a take to you? An interesting take, Charlie.
Absolutely.
Let me know how you feel about this. I might roll it out on Get Up this morning, actually. The Dak Prescott injury is good for the team because it forced them all to step up. Like, it was a team that felt like it was very reliant on Dak. They go as Dak goes. The defense is playing better. The defense is playing different. The offensive line, like, protected. Not that the Giants have some great pass rush, but the offensive line protected Cooper Rush in a way that they did not protect Dak. And it was against Wink Martindale, who is going to blitz the ever-living, I didn't cuss. He's just going to blitz you. I'm proud of myself for holding the profanity back. But then they protected the hell out of him, and that's partially because the running game was effective. It's partially because the O-line was good. And I think the major part of it is we have to – I'm hesitant to give credit to coaches, as you know, because they get too much credit as it is. But I do think part of this was they feel like Dak Prescott has fewer limitations or has no limitations, so the whole playbook is open and you want to score 100 points. But with Cooper Rush, they're like, all right, we're going to move the pocket. We're going to do play action. We're going to run the ball. We're not going to have you out there pitching. What the hell is so funny, Charlie?
I'm laughing at you because you just mental gymnastics your way. That Dak Prescott's too good to be coached well, and that's why the team is playing better with Cooper Rush.
Hold on. What's the alternative? I think that's the most reasonable alternative. What is the alternative? That Cooper Rush is better than Dak?
No. They played a really good week one opponent.
Yeah, but they were bad against that opponent. I think the opponent was really good. Defensively, not offensively, but defensively. But they also were, like, inept, and the penalties were still a problem, which actually, don't tell anybody, but the penalties were still a problem today or last night. Now that people are listening to it, like, they were not completely cured. It helped that they were playing against the Giants, but they have not addressed whatever discipline or I don't know how what you chalk penalties up to, but they haven't fixed that. There's still lots of, like, well, not lots, but too many false starts, too many holdings that, like, killed first half drives. They eliminated those in the second half, which was a lot better. It just felt like defensively they were impressive all game long. Offensively, they woke up in the second half. CeeDee Lamb was dropping balls in the first half and making one-handed catches in the second half. It felt like Pollard had that one big run in the first half, and there was nothing else of note offensively in the first half. It took the Giants to score. Did the Giants take the lead? That's what happened, right? The Giants took the lead, and then all of a sudden the Cowboys kind of kicked into higher gear and woke up and started to score points. But they ran the ball well all night. Oh, nice hat. Bo knows. I like that. I didn't notice that was a Bo Jackson hat. I saw a Bo Jackson clip on the internet today when I was riding on the train. Just that, you remember that one where he threw somebody out from right. He threw somebody out at third base from right field.
It's unbelievable. And any Bo Jackson throwing clip is as impressive as any of his like running the football clips.
He's just an incredible athlete. It's so sad that his body couldn't hold up underneath the strain of his body. It was just impressive. Oh, got off tangent, but my bad. Back to the football game. It felt like an old school football game, and maybe that's why I got drawn back to that Bo Jackson thought, because it was fun. It's a nice change up, a good experience of let's protect these quarterbacks. And I feel bad for Daniel Jones, but also he's not good enough.
Yeah.
Like there were points when he needed to make plays and he didn't make them. And there were also the majority of the game, he was under duress. And it's just like, I don't know. I mean, I think I know about him. He did a great job not fumbling today because he got hit enough to fumble. But he doesn't make. I don't think you could tell the difference between him and Cooper Rush today. You know what I mean? Like they were kind of managed the same way. They're both game managed. And I think he's probably better than Cooper Rush. His athleticism.
It's faster. That's for sure.
Yeah, his athleticism was a boon in this game. When the pass rush was getting after him, his running ability was impressive. I would take him over Cooper Rush because of that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not as high on Cooper as it feels like you might be.
No. I just think, like, if you watch that game, you probably played just as well or better than Daniel Jones. Like, it's not, Daniel Jones didn't light the world on fire.
Yeah, Daniel Jones is not good. It's hard to suss out how bad he was. Actually, it's not that hard. He was bad, and the O-line didn't protect him. They both can, like, be true at the same time. When he got opportunities, he made, like, that one ridiculous jump pass with a man sitting in his lap. He dropped that right on the sideline. But I don't know. Other than that, I feel like Cooper had a better game than him.
I do have a Cooper Rush question. All right. I want to ask you what the narrative is going to be. So Dak has been out for a couple weeks, probably going to be out for four or five more weeks. They play the Commanders next week. They play the Rams after that.
Is it up to, I mean, I thought it was like 6 weeks and then Jerry Jones was like, nah, 3 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, Jerry Jones.
We're back up to 6 weeks now.
I'm just assuming that Jerry Jones is not actually going to be the doctor that clears him at this point. The 6 to 8 week timeline is legitimate, but
so it's going to be that cowboy hat doctor that we saw on the field again.
Okay. Let's just imagine real medical professional looking at Dak Prescott's thumb.
Okay.
Commanders. Cooper Rush probably looked pretty good next week against that secondary.
Yeah.
The Rams, tough game. Eagles, tough game, a potentially high scoring game. Then they've got the Lions and the Bears. There's a chance that Cooper Rush, 5 weeks from now, has gone 3-2. And he's 4-2 over this chunk as a starter. What is Jerry Jones and what is the press going to be saying against Cooper Rush if he's 4-2 with this team that we had written off after week one?
It's going to be impossible to listen to. They're going to go crazy. But I mean, I want to go back to my theory about his limitations forced the coaches to coach. You keep laughing at it. You think it's a bad theory?
No, I just like, I can't believe that the theory is that the coaches are better because the player is worse.
Yes, that's the theory. It's not a crazy theory. It's a good theory. So it's like how it's the same logic of like if you're driving an SUV, you might be a little bit more aggressive than if you're driving a bicycle. You feel safer. I do think they feel safer in calling plays. And I think because of the heights that they've reached offensively with Dak Prescott, particularly Kellen Moore enters games with Dak Prescott with the plan of we're going to score 35. You enter games with Cooper Rush with the plan of we're not going to blow this. We're going to scheme up throws that do not require him to read a defense that are like deep shots. This is when we're going to take chance. And I think with Dak Prescott, it's different. And they send him out there and they're like, they allow Dak the latitude to make decisions at the line of scrimmage, which Cooper Rush did not make not near audible all game long. It didn't even seem like he had like the check with me's where you like go to the line with two plays called and you can like kill the first play and go to the second play. They kept it simple for Cooper Rush. And I think that it's possible that sometimes they put a lot more pressure on Dak Prescott to do a lot more offensively. I don't think that's crazy. It's a good theory.
Should they ask Dak to do less?
Sometimes, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't think they should ask him to do less like they do. Like, they don't need to put kid gloves on him like they do with Cooper Rush. But I think sometimes they enter the game and they're like, all right, Dak, do your thing, start to finish. Which that's a Josh Allen approach. He's not Josh Allen.
Yeah.
That's a Lamar Jackson approach. He's not that guy. Mahomes, like, he's not that guy. And we are learning that Russell Wilson is also not that guy. I think that Russell and Dak are similar in that way, that they can do incredible things and be incredible for stretches. However, they aren't just like green light as soon as they step in the gym, Steph Curry style. And I think sometimes they show that ability, and that leads coaches to believe that that's the best thing for them. And it's an easier thing to do. So I do think that there's a different mindset in the building. I think it's hard for us to measure and predict psychology of players, and different players and different teams react to circumstances differently. And this team played a really, I think you're going to dismiss everything that I've said just by saying they played the Bucks week one, and then they played the Bengals and the Giants. And that's the difference.
I think that's part of the difference.
So you're not buying into all my psychological analysis.
No. I like it a little bit more than I thought I was going to like it. I think it's fair to say that everyone needs a little motivation from time to time. I think it's an indictment on Kellen Moore if he coaches a worse game with Dak Prescott than he does with Cooper Rush. But I don't know. I'm a little bit floored by it, because Kellen Moore is officially the exact opposite of Bill Belichick in every way. Bill Belichick coaching worse with Mac Jones than Tom Brady. But I guess each team is own.
I appreciate you challenging me. Maybe I'm getting caught up in my morning television storyline, like, motivation. We need storylines for morning TV. Yeah. Maybe we don't need them for podcasts.
This is the counter storyline, though, because you know the storyline is going to be, do we have a quarterback controversy brewing in Dallas? And okay. Your counter, yeah. This is the counterfactual that I like that you're workshopping it here.
Yeah, we got to test it out here. So, I mean, that's stupid. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. When I know you don't believe that, but when someone says that, inevitably, it's probably going to be this week. If it's not this week, it'll be next week.
You're going to see that today. You're going to see that today.
I'm going to lose my mind if I see that today. Wait, he's 3-0 as a starter, right? Cooper Rush?
Yeah. 2-0 so far this year. I undersold him. He could actually be 5-2 by the time Dak comes back, which is also
That's
wild.
Absurd. He's not going to be
5-2. That's the schedule. That's the schedule.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Give me those games again.
Commanders?
Okay, that's winnable. We'll give him a win there.
Okay.
That's 3 wins.
Rams?
That's a loss.
Eagles?
That's obviously a loss.
Lions?
That's a loss.
I think they could win that game.
I think they could, but I'm counting it as a loss for my own purposes.
And then the Bears.
That's a win. So, yeah. That's 4-2 in that stretch.
4-3 or 5-3 in that stretch. Depending on the Lions game.
Whew, I think we got a quarterback controversy. Let's trade Dak. Is there anything else of this game that's interesting? Like, the narrative of this game switched to me, because, like, when you watch games, knowing that you're going to have to talk about it, like, I'm taking notes and I'm completely prepared to blame the penalties, the mistakes, CeeDee dropping a pass, and all of that stuff, and Pollard making a big run but not scoring, juxtaposed to Saquon making a big run and actually getting in the end zone. That's the storyline in my head, is like, they could not take advantage of their opportunities. Cooper Rush needed more help than he got, because he's not the guy. And the Giants playmakers stepped up. And then it all changed.
Yeah.
And it seemed like CeeDee caught like 6 passes on that one drive in a one-handed touchdown. Pollard was making positive runs. Zeke was falling forward for 5 and 6 yards. Like, I feel like they averaged like 8 yards a carry. It was stupid. Yeah. They were running the ball so well, and it just all changed. And then the Giants started dropping passes, and I guess Daniel Jones was running for his life all game.
The thing that I thought was, first of all, CeeDee Lamb, if they had pinstripes, if this was the Yankees, this would be the CeeDee Lamb earned his pinstripes game with the Cowboys. But I thought this is one thing that I thought was very interesting, was this was the game that proved both the running backs matter and the running backs don't matter theory, which is unbelievable. They both happened in the same game that you had three running backs be awesome. Whether offensive line, obviously a huge part of it, three running backs be awesome and probably the three best players in this game. And then you look at it and you're like, one was the fifth pick or fourth pick in Zeke. One was the second pick in Saquon Barkley. And you look at me like, damn, who's the best running back in that game? Oh, yeah, it's Tony Pollard, who's a fourth round pick who Jerry Jones doesn't want to give the ball because he loves his first round running back, Ezekiel Elliott.
I get where you're coming from. However, Tony Pollard is the aberration.
I know.
Yeah, I think you have a higher. I am not suggesting in the year 2022 that anyone draft running backs in the top 10 by any stretch. But if you are going to have an early 90s style game, you better go ahead and draft that guy early because you have a better chance of finding the guy. But yeah, you're right. That it did prove that point.
Everyone got something tonight. If you want to say running backs matter, look at Zeke, look at Saquon. If not, just look at Tony. He's on the sideline with his helmet off because Jerry won't give him the ball enough.
What about Lawrence, DeMarcus Lawrence? Mm-hmm. He played his ass off, and that was impressive through the course of this game. And we got a slightly sick Micah Parsons, but he still was freakish. I don't think he ended up with any sacks, did he? But he got pressure. He drew attention. He did impressive things. You saw that one time when he had a tackle on him. The tight end was also to his side. He ricocheted off of both of them and ran through the guard to, like, plant Daniel Jones just as he was throwing the ball.
So I know it's, like, it's just, like, a bull rush, but with Micah Parsons, I've been in my head calling them defensive pancakes because he actually defensive pancakes offensive linemen, which is, I don't know anyone else in the NFL who does that.
I like it. I like it. We need to add that as a stat because it's not a bull rush. You can get a bull rush. A bull rush is a move.
Yeah.
A defensive pancake is a actual result. You're right. I think he's second to, he's got to be second to Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
You remember when Aaron Donald played the Cowboys? Was that last year? And there were two plays where he just was throwing big old offensive linemen around. I think he had like three of them on one play, and he was just pushing them all into Dak Prescott. It was scary.
He's the best. He's the best. Yeah. One thing before we move on. Is the Cowboys defense like kind of good?
Yeah, they're very good.
They're a totally underrated unit, right?
Yeah, they are very good. I did not think they were going to be this good. I thought that if they were going to be good, it was going to be based on Micah Parsons. And that's what it is. It's like that front is so impressive that it covers up issues that they have in the back end when they do have issues in the back end. And that Giants offensive line, I thought was going to be better. They had a rough time tonight. The young tackles were in hell with Lawrence and Parsons. And they even started blitzing some too. It was rough. When Daniel Jones was running the ball, they started to blitz to answer that, and that crushed everything. So yeah, I think this defense is really good, and offense is being smart, taking pressure off of the defense.
The offense is well coached. The defense is good.
It's true. I mean, I wouldn't even go as far as to say the offense is well coached. The offense is well managed, or at least they have been well managed in the last couple of weeks. Like I didn't see anything revolutionary out there. I'm not calling Kellen Moore a genius. Dan Quinn, on the other hand, actually, I wouldn't call him a genius either. They got boys on the other side that are making plays. That's what it boils down to. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. Is that enough? Can we go in the time machine now? Or is there more stuff on this game that we need to discuss?
Let's time travel.
All right. Our Dolphins, because we are a Dolphins pod, big win over the weekend. And we predicted it. So that makes it even bigger and better. And so they're going to win the Super Bowl and our podcast is going to go through the roof, right?
That's right. That's right.
The game, I was really high on it like Sunday after the game. I was really high, excited about our Dolphins winning. Tua's health was a concern, but they played well enough. The defense was great in key moments. But then I've taken some time to rewatch the game and think about what actually happens and break it all down. And while I still think the Dolphins are competitive, I'm less like the Dolphins are. I think maybe I'll probably do a power ranking on Get Up this week. And I might put Dolphins at number one. We'll see. But I think that's my heart and not my head, because when I watch that game, it feels like there are some extenuating circumstances that gave the Dolphins that win. They would have been in the game either way, but they tried to give it away with the butt punt. The Bills struggled in the red zone. They had no trouble really moving the ball, but they struggled in the red zone. Josh Allen did some like old school Josh Allen crazy things, like the fake spike that almost got intercepted that cost them points. And then the terrible accuracy or inaccuracy on man-to-man coverage. Like, he was doing some old school Josh Allen stuff, along with also throwing for 400 yards, which is in running people over and juking the hell out of them. So it was a full Josh Allen experience.
So I got three questions for you about this game, because Josh Allen, you just laid the point that I think leads to questions about the Bills offense. And that one is, they basically, he had a Big 12 stat line. He threw the ball 63 times. And we all know running backs don't matter. You don't want to run the ball, but like, not being able to run the ball and not having a run heavy offense are two very different things. And does it give you any concern that right now the Bills does not seem like the Bills can run the ball at all?
I mean, it gives me some concern for the Bills on are the Bills perfect conversation? Yes, it gives me some concern there. But no, they're not perfect, which no team is, and they all have shortcomings. And if their shortcoming is their best running back is also their quarterback, they're not the only team in the league that's like that. And he is probably the biggest and sturdiest, because it's not that they can't run the ball. It's just like they can't run the ball with a running back. I feel like the design Josh Allen runs in this game, they weren't as productive as they have been, but it feels like that's a reasonable, running attack, you know, like it's not, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't feel nervous about that.
I mean, do we want that though? Like, do we want that? We always think that Josh Allen and Cam Newton are indestructible, but then Cam Newton becomes Cam Newton. Like, I don't think the Bills want that.
If he follows the Cam Newton timeline, as far as health is concerned, he's already probably better than Cam Newton at his best.
Okay, but
if he
follows that, I meant physical comparison.
If he follows that with the team that they have around him, that's good enough to get them to a couple Super Bowls, and we'll see what happens when he gets there. So I think they would take that, a 10-year outstanding Josh Allen, over 16 years of Josh Allen being a version of himself that's not all that great. I have been surprised, and I guess that's the point, is the lack of running attack that they, like traditional running attack.
Lack of variety.
It's forced them into like this Josh Allen, because last year they didn't run the ball with Josh Allen nearly as much. It felt like early in the season design run. So getting them in that position is not great for them. But I think why it matters is when the defense knows what you're going to do, it makes it really hard to do it. No matter who you are, when you're in the NFL and you have a couple pass concepts that you major in, you want to be able to force the defense to adjust to more things. You don't have to be a dominant running attack, but be able to pick up 4 yards when you're going up against a light box. Doesn't feel like they can do that regularly. And the ability to do that does force the defense into tougher situations. And I thought the Dolphins didn't have a good running game statistically, but it felt like at times when they needed a run, they got a run. And maybe that's just like bad eyeball analysis, but it certainly seemed like they were able, because when I watched the game and then rewatched it, I was like, damn, Dolphins ran the ball pretty well. Then I looked at the numbers, I was like, ugh, the Dolphins didn't.
17 carries for 41 yards.
But the touchdown runs, big conversions. It seemed like at times when they needed to run, they ran the ball well. And that's all the Bills really need to do is make people respect their running attack. And they have the personnel to do it, you would think. But I think it speaks to practice. You can only be good at so many things, you know, and so it requires a lot of practice and dedication to the running attack, I would believe, to be good at it. And they are dedicated to pass protecting and letting Josh Allen cook.
Yeah. And I think that's a fair way to look at it. And I think I wanted to ask that question because I wanted to know if we put a cap on the team. But what I really think the looming question over this game is basically you look at the total yardage and the Bills outgained the Dolphins 515 to 212 in the yard discrepancy. And I look at that and the Bills should probably score 35 points when you score 500 or when you gain 515 yards. And so do you view either of these teams differently? Because I think it's fair to assess the Bills and the Dolphins.
Right.
I personally, I don't, yeah. But I would love to know if you do.
I don't, but I think other people should for the Dolphins. So like yeah. I've been high on the Dolphins since before the season started. So I thought that they had this level of competitiveness. But I do think proved
yep.
with what they did last week, people could chalk that up as a fluke. Fourth quarter went crazy. The Ravens secondary had bust after bust, and that's not a real thing. For them to come back and knock off the best team in football, I think that people should consider them a realistic contender. Even though the way they did it, to the point that we were making, is the Bills' drives. They went touchdown, then the next drive was ended by a fumble. Then they scored a touchdown, and then they got forced to punt, which is impressive. Then it was end of quarter with that spike, or end of half with that fake spike foolishness that Josh Allen tried that didn't work. Then they kicked the field goal, and then they missed the field goal, and then they were turned it over on downs, and then the game ended again with them with the ball in the red zone. So they had no problem moving the ball, and they had no problem scoring earlier. But towards the end of the game, they just kind of fell apart in the red zone, which red zone efficiency is one of those things that it falls in the turnover category, that part of it is randomness, you know? And if they can move the ball like that consistently, they're going to be a pretty good team. So I'm not down on the Bills. And it was hot as hell. People were passing out and not finishing the game. That's not a... It's a September in Miami problem. That's not a problem that you're going to have late in the season or in the playoffs, no matter where you end up playing. So I'm not worried about the Bills, but I do think the Dolphins opened some people's eyes and also like proved it to themselves, which is some cliche foolishness, but I think it matters.
No, I agree. Like you watch games like that. We came into this season with legitimate questions about if Tua is a game managing quarterback, how good this team is going to be. Is it just going to be the weapons? When you win close games and you win in tough situations, that matters. I don't care what the nerds say. We're a pro nerd podcast that can think for itself.
I like it.
And when we're going to move on to other narrative stuff, because I have a question to ask you about something that I've been thinking about for the last 2 weeks, I think is maybe the most under talked about storyline in the NFL. And I have a bunch of questions about Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars. And I think he's not getting attention because he is Trevor Lawrence of the Jacksonville Jaguars. But this guy was supposed to be John Elway when he came out of the draft. He basically went toe-to-toe with Justin Herbert yesterday, blew them out, was throwing highlight reel throws that made Justin Herbert like, you know, football porn last year for all of us guys who want to follow it. And I, at this current point, would pick the Jaguars to win the AFC South because he's clearly the best quarterback in that division. That division is terrible. But what is the turning point you see coming for when people pay attention to Trevor Lawrence, Doug Peterson, and the Jaguars?
They're 2-1 right now, and that's not enough to get people's attention, especially in Jacksonville. I think you're right. They're the best team in that division. I was nervous. That I was forced to pick like a team that could surprise people. On Get Up, and I picked the Jaguars. I was a little nervous about that pick, but I'm happy to see it coming at least a little bit to fruition early on in the season, because Trevor Lawrence is incredible. I mean, they have a lot of really talented players. They stink all the time. They pick at the top of the draft. So they have a lot of really talented players. Josh Allen, their pass rusher, the namesake of the quarterback, but obviously not the quarterback, is playing well. The defense is playing well. So, yeah, I really like this team. For them to get this attention, it has to be in prime time. They have to do it in prime time at some point, and they have to rack up some more wins. And that's what it comes down to. And we'll start talking about them then. And this is
OK, but counterpoint to that, and a quick count. If you look at point differential in the NFL, they're second. They're between the Bills and the Eagles. If I erased the name and I made that the Chiefs, you'd be like, Mahomes, QB1. Come on. Chiefs are doing Chief things. It's the Jaguars. And this is a team that we laughed at for 4 months last year.
Coaching matters. Organizational stability matters. Yes. This is why I know no one wants to hear me say get on my players' rights high horse again. But this is why I am fully in favor of any player demanding a trade or refusing to go to the team that drafts them. Because if Urban Meyer was just a little bit more competent, he'd still be down there ruining Trevor Lawrence's career. And we'd be like, Trevor Lawrence is a bust. When in actuality, no. It just was a shit show down there. And who can survive in that? Right now, Trevor Lawrence is seventh in QBR behind Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. And that's considering where they were last year, that's like, I don't want to say MVP conversation, but like if they win a division and they keep going and he keeps having these highlight throws, you're right. It's still Jacksonville, but that's the type of stuff that I think will change the way we talk about this team and talk about Trevor Lawrence going forward. But it comes, you pointed out win or point differential. You can point out all the numbers you want. People don't care about it until they see it. And Jacksonville plays in the midst of a bunch of other games, and it's not a marquee team. So no one's looking to talk about them. They're going to have to do a Monday night, Thursday night, Sunday night. It's going to have to be a primetime game, either that or they just got to keep winning. So they're going to have to earn our respect. I think they already have my respect and your respect, but for us to have this Trevor Lawrence and Jacksonville like conversation on major platforms regularly, they're going to have to do it regularly. And that's why Patrick Mahomes gets the benefit of doubt and guys like that, because they've been doing it for long enough for us to assume that it's not an aberration.
It's just fascinating because, like, there's nothing we as a viewing public more than confirmation bias. And that's usually when a prodigy pans out. It's like, oh, I told you, freshman at Clemson, this guy's the next John Elway. We're literally having that and no one cares. Jacksonville is more powerful than our own confirmation bias.
I think,
and we love nothing more than being right.
We do love confirmation bias, but we also love a fall. We love a great fall. So I think it's somewhere cut in between. I think some people appreciate the idea that Trevor Lawrence was going to be a bust. So he's going to have to do this a few more weeks. And then we'll all jump on our confirmation bias thing and point out how we knew he was going to be great and blame Urban Meyer, who deserves our scorn.
Well, that's the big question of it too. Like, I didn't know if Doug Peterson was that good of a coach. And I don't know if it's just a comparison to Urban Meyer, but like now you look back at him almost getting Carson Wentz an MVP and you're like, oh, that was pretty good. Coaching does matter.
Yeah.
Do you think he's a good coach?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I have nothing. It's hard to base it on because it felt like the Super Bowl run. Frank Reich got a lot of credit for that, but I guess it's hard to give him credit now considering how he's playing. And it's early in Jacksonville and they just came from, I mean, yeah, I'm parsing things. Yes, he's a good coach. They were trash last year. They have not changed much in that building other than the coaching staff. And now they're the best team in their division. So I don't know who else you give the credit to than the head coach and
Christian Kirk
staff that he the staff that they brought in and Christian Kirk, who's got a lot of heat because he made a lot of money, which is not his fault. And I guess he's living up to it. I guess I don't know. It's playing well.
All right. That's all the Jacksonville questions I had.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Should we move on to our game that I like to call Dead Ass Wrong? This is through 3 weeks of the NFL season. I've been dead ass wrong about blank. Oh. Insert a bevy of things. Oh. And I want Dominique Foxworth to explain why.
Oh, I like this. So I don't have to admit to the things that I'm dead ass wrong about.
No,
it's just you're dead ass
wrong. This is
all right, cool. Go ahead.
This is me. I'm taking the heat here and passing, and you get to explain why I was dumb.
Okay, no problem.
Coming into the season, I thought the Broncos won the Russell Wilson trade. Through 3 weeks, I have been dead ass wrong. And you, Dominique Foxworth, explain why.
I can't. I wish I could, but I can't. So Nathaniel Hackett, I guess, is all I can blame it on. Nathaniel Hackett is game management, and his proximity to Aaron Rodgers had people thinking that he was a good offensive coach. It doesn't appear to be panning out. And Russell was on a slide last season that we chalked up to a hand injury, that maybe it wasn't just that, but I can't figure out what's wrong with him. When I watch, it's not like the receivers aren't open. There are plenty of receivers open on occasion. So I guess that takes the pressure off Nathaniel Hackett, but I be honest with you, I can't really explain what's wrong with him. The defense has been playing really well, and you only won a little bit more from their offense. They've won. So I guess we should be happy for them, but they won because of safety, which again falls on their defense playing really well. So I'm sorry. This is a bad way to start this new game. I like the concept, but I don't have a real answer for you for why Russ is not good and this team is not good.
I have a few follow-up questions that maybe we can tease that together. The first one is, like, I think you're right. Russ has eaten off of those first six games of 2020 when he was talking about never getting MVP votes more than any quarterback in recent memory, because he hasn't been that good since. But are the Broncos completely shitting themselves for the contract they just gave Russell Wilson at this point? Three games in.
I mean, I don't see how they can't be nervous about it. Because like I mentioned, there are people open in the middle of the field. That's not where Russ is hitting. And he hasn't been hitting his deep balls the way that you tend to like Russell to play. There's nothing. If you took the name off the back of the jersey and you watch Russell play, you would have very little faith in this team going forward, or this player going forward. So yes, I'd be concerned if I committed over $100 million in a contract that takes you to 2027 to this quarterback who we haven't seen be good in quite some time now, and has yet to be good in your uniform. And you're also committed to a coach. I guess they got long money. Their Walmart money is long, so they can get off the coach whenever they want to. Walmart money is not long enough to circumvent the salary cap, so they're gonna have to figure out a way to do that. Slide somebody else some money under the table to get them in if Russell can't figure it out. I still have hope that he can figure it out, but I don't have anything to point to. I guess week one, he moved the ball well and they sputtered in the red zone, which wasn't his fault. But yeah, it's hard to point.
His QBR has gotten worse every single week. So it's not trending in the right direction, even though Nathan has his special game managing assistant coach now.
Yes. Ross Berg, right? He was the guy when I was in Baltimore. He was Harbaugh's assistant head coach. So maybe he can bring some of that magic. I don't know. I thought it was a good decision to do, but it really kind of undercuts your coach. Like, I hate it for Nathaniel, but whatever. All right, what else were you wrong about?
So I'm going to move on to the second one. I think this is one that you've been pretty passionate about. I thought it was a mistake that Lamar Jackson didn't work out a contract before the season. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a mistake that he was negotiating his own deal. I thought it was unrealistic to expect him to go back to his 2019 form and be a dominant runner and passer the way he was that year, because he was so special that year. I thought the Ravens offense had stagnated. I was dead wrong. And I want you, Dominique Foxworth, to explain why.
Yeah, so I had no problem with him going into the season and playing, because the career-ending injury rate is not something that happens very often. Like, it's a low percentage chance. The devaluing injury idea, like, also to me, for somebody like Lamar, is less of a concern. I didn't think that there was any way he could go through this season and have less leverage. Like, there's obviously a way, but I thought it was a higher percentage chance that he ends this season with more leverage than he had in the previous season. And yeah, like, he's better than everybody else. That's how you were dead wrong, is you forgot that. You let the injuries creep into your head and make you believe that he was not great. And he's gotten better with his pocket presence and his, I mean, he always has been a pocket passer, but he's gotten better from the pocket so far this year without running the ball. And he's still running for 100 yards in games.
He's running the ball better than he did last year.
You know how it frustrates me when people talk about quarterbacks and say it's their responsibility to raise the level of everyone around them. He's actually doing it, and he's not. And where the level is not raised, he just does it himself. It's really incredible what he's doing so far this season. He had 4 touchdowns through the air and 100 yards on the ground. Like, I don't know how things, the Ravens need to hurry up. I guess he's not negotiating now, but they need to hurry up and pay him before the price goes up.
Well, this is the interesting part. I think it's still completely unrealistic that he's going to get the guaranteed money that Deshaun Watson wanted. And that's what's sort of been, or got, and that's what's sort of been reported. And that seems like a one-off thing that the rest of the league is like, that Jimmy Haslam guy's kind of crazy. We aren't doing that.
Right.
It's like, do you think that's possible? Like, where does this end with him?
I think it's possible, but I think it's unlikely that he gets the fully guaranteed contract. I think he's going to get a huge guarantee. And if he's comfortable with this Kirk Cousins strategy, then he will get the fully guaranteed contract. So, like, if they don't give him a contract that he likes and he has to play under the franchise tag next year, and then he does it again, the third year, they will not put him under franchise tag. He'll be an unrestricted free agent. And then he'll be in a position similar to what Deshaun Watson was in, where Deshaun Watson wasn't truly a free agent, but the team that he was with didn't want him, so he could go shop his services around. So then he'll be able to shop his services around, and someone will be willing to guarantee him every dollar that he wants. Whether that's where he wants to go, we'll find out about that when that time comes. But if his goal is to get a fully guaranteed contract, it may take 2 years from now, but he'll get it.
Yeah. Do you think he's as good at, do you think he's on the tier with Josh Allen and Pat Mahomes now?
Absolutely. I mean,
I viewed them as a separate entity of everyone else, aliens that exist on a higher plane. But now I'm wondering.
That's a tough question. I mean, I obviously, when you're talking about value to their team, he's number one.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Above the Bills with Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Why?
Because what Lamar Jackson means to his team as far as his ability to impact the game, it's more important. Like, he brings more value to his team than Josh Allen does. Josh Allen, and I guess it's more about Lamar's uniqueness, because you pull Josh or pull Lamar out of his situation, drop average quarterback in there, it's a tire fire. The same is not true for Josh Allen. I think you drop average quarterback in there. They have good receivers. They have a good offensive line. They have talented defense. I don't think it's the same. And maybe that speaks more to their uniqueness than it does to their value.
Tyler Huntley was kind of good.
Yeah, Tyler Huntley was kind of good. Okay. All right. I'm dead wrong. There we go. Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson are both peers when it comes to their value to their team. You're right.
By the way, this was the most mature Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson debate of all time. I unintentionally pitted them against each other, but not with one being good, one
what
being
happens,
bad, with them both being excellent. So patting ourselves on the back.
What happens if you switch them?
That's a fascinating question. I'll tell you one thing that happens. The Bills can run the ball.
Well played. All right. What else were you dead wrong about?
All right. So the next one I have is something that I think is pretty fascinating. And that's, I want to go to the Eagles for a second on this one, because they're one of your final four teams, and they're a team that I really like going into the season. But this is something we've vigorously agreed about that they were going to go as far as Jalen Hurts could take them, and we viewed him as potentially a weak point or a sticking point for the Eagles. Now he's one of the best QBs in the league. Like, I view him stylistically as a more solid, more dependable Kyler Murray. Why was I so dead?
I mean, I was too. I didn't think this was the ceiling. He's MVP conversation right now. It's early, I know, but he's playing incredibly well. His QBR is 6th in the league, and his team is unbeaten, and he's putting up impressive video game numbers week in and week out. I don't think, if you ask me, I wouldn't have expected that either. He got better. And players tend not to get, like, Josh Allen is the example of a player who just like had an astronomical leap. Jalen Hurts is looking like one of those players right now who just has an astronomical leap and makes one of his weaknesses his strengths. While Josh Allen struggled against man coverage this week, he hasn't. And last season or year before that. But the year before that, we were like, oh, Josh Allen can't beat man coverage. He doesn't have the accuracy to beat man coverage. They gave him a receiver that could beat man coverage. That for Jalen Hurts is he can't beat zone coverage as a passer, and he can't pass from inside the pocket. Seems like that's all he's doing this year. And if you can make your weakness your strength, that's something that I cannot predict. And that is how you and I both ended up wrong on Jalen Hurts, is we had no way of believing that this quarterback who got his job taken in college because he couldn't pass from the pocket and then hadn't really shown the ability to pass from the pocket or pick apart zones yet in his NFL career. We had no reason to believe that A.J. Brown showing up and whatever offseason work that Jalen Hurts did was going to pan out this well. Like, you want to, you're bad at something, you want to like get to average so it's not a weakness. It's like a strength now. The last couple of weeks, it's just been a strength of him killing these zone coverages from the pocket. And if he can do that, sky's the limit for this team.
It's like really interesting. I think back to a draft eval I read of, or a draft report, I should say, I read of Jalen Hurts before his rookie season. And this is, I feel like this is a report that gets leaked from time to time where they were like, ooh, Bill Belichick really loves Jalen Hurts off the field. He feels that he's like simpatico with the way that Bill Belichick thinks about football. Nick Saban said he was an extension of the coach on the field. And I sort of just took that report and threw it in the trash. And I was like, Jalen Hurts, probably a really good guy, still not an accurate passer. And I kind of think that might have mattered more than I thought, that he was like, they were basically telling us that he had the intangible of having an incredible football mind. And now he's matched with Nick Sirianni, who might be a better coach than we realized too.
Yeah, I think we accepted Nick Sirianni was a good coach last year when they switched their offense. And I think that's part of it, is they switched their offense to this like quarterback run centric offense. And that's when they started to succeed. And I think that's when we were like, all right, well, they're going to go as far as Jalen Hurts can take them because they're doing this kind of semi-unique thing. But then if he's branched out to be able to do it the way that Peyton Manning does it and also still run the ball, then this team going to be a problem. I guess you could point at, they beat Detroit, Minnesota and Washington right now, which none of them, I guess Washington's defensive front is good, but none of them are like defensive powers. So maybe that's part of the reason why he's putting up these numbers. But they're NFL teams, and he's cooking them, so I like it. He had 340. And so he had more passing yards in this last game than he had against Minnesota when he was just swallowing Minnesota up. 340 and 3 touchdowns, yeah. He's the man.
Sick. All right, I got 2 more quick ones. I thought Devontae Adams would make the Raiders a dynamic offense. In his last 2 games, he has 48 yards on 17 targets.
Yeah. Making them a dynamic offense is not only about him catching the ball, you know, and a receiver can only do so much. The scheme stinks and the quarterback's not playing well. I think Devontae Adams should open it up for other people. And if it's not opening it up for other people, he should be making big plays. He's not having a terrible season, but this offense isn't good. This team isn't good. And it comes down to us, I think, giving a lot more credit to Josh McDaniels than he deserves.
Oh, you think maybe we should have read into him not taking the Colts job and going back for a second internship with the Patriots?
Oh, gosh. And he just gets it. And we keep thinking he's good. Or well, not we, but he failed at his first stop as a head coach in Denver. Then he went back and like excelled with Tom Brady as your quarterback as he did before, and then didn't really do much when Tom Brady was gone, and then people thought he was a genius again, and he got another job. I don't get it. I wasn't high on him or high on this team. I did expect them to do better offensively. I thought they would lose a bunch of shootouts, but this ain't pretty. And they got Gus Bradley over there. Oh, no, it's not. Gus Bradley's gone now. He's with the Colts. But anyway, they don't have the talent they need defensively to compete with people. This team is done in that bad or in that tough division.
Which might not be as tough as we thought. All right, last one.
Let's not spend any more time on the Raiders.
Okay, last one. This is a quick one. And this is one we were both dead wrong about. Before the season, you postulated, and I agreed that Justin Fields should demand a trade because the Bears were putting him in a bad position. You know, sometimes results are wonky, and the Bears are very unconvincing 2-1. But Justin Fields has been really, really, really bad so far to start this year.
Yeah.
The Bears should be demanding better quarterback play from Justin Fields.
We were dead wrong because I think we did not appreciate that Justin Fields is not developed into the quarterback that we had all hoped he should be yet. And part of that development is about what's around him. So I'm not ready to commit to being dead ass wrong. I think we're dead ass right is that he should have demanded a trade and the Bears should capitulate and let him go elsewhere because it's a better situation for everyone going forward. Justin Fields needs a little more support than they're giving him and they are in a rebuild. So can we be both at the same time?
I like that spin.
Yeah, you got to spin it, baby. Don't give up.
Well, you know what, Bears fans? We're both apologizing and saying we were right. I do think we should pivot and talk about a more serious story and a story that I think you have particular expertise in, which is that the Washington Post reported that the sentiments among team owners have shifted significantly around the league and that other team owners might want Dan Snyder to sell the team on his own and if not, get votes to vote him out.
Yeah.
And I wonder, how do you think this is going to play out from here?
So they need 2/3 votes to vote him out. I think that's very unlikely that, 24 of the owners vote him out?
75%.
Yeah.
75%.
Yeah. I think that's unlikely to actually happen. I think what they want him to do is probably sell. And these reporters, this was leaked to them. This is something that the owners and the NFL wants out there. And I'm very reluctant to think that this is about the league's image or about integrity of the owners or them believing that it's bad to have someone running a team that has sexual misconduct. Like, I don't think that it's about that. And I'm sure that these guys have whatever integrity that they have. I don't know. I don't pass judgment on that, but I don't think it's about that. What I think it comes down to, honestly, is about franchise value. And every time you can sell a franchise, it improves everyone else's franchise value and frankly makes them more money on paper than anything else they can do. And with Jeff Bezos in DC now, my guess is they would look to sell to him or to sell to somebody like him because these are incredible like assets to own. They not only earn money, but they also make you the coolest guy in whatever city you're in. And it makes it easier to close business deals because you're having a negotiation in a luxury box or on the sideline of an NFL game that you own. Like it has a lot of value that you can't find anywhere else. And my guess is that's what they want. So if that's what they want, it's probably going to happen eventually. I don't see them voting him out, but they'll make it uncomfortable enough for him to want to move. And they're going to continue to leak stories like this that embarrass him and make him uncomfortable. And they'll force him to sell and they'll go to the highest bidder and it'll be like $8 billion. And all the owners will then have added a couple extra billion to their net worth because this franchise is one of the more valuable ones in the league.
So why don't they want to vote? Okay, so in that report, they said that basically Jerry Jones is one of Snyder's allies and they think he can wrangle up 7 votes and that might make it difficult to vote him out because they'll get the 9 on Jerry and Dan's side. But we heard so much, now it feels like utter hogwash over the last decade about protect the shield. We need to protect the shield with all these stories. Why don't the owners want to vote him out? This dude's a disgrace. I get from DC, I've been a fan my whole life. On the field, off the field, we can list all the things he's done. And there are many from, you know, selling Pentagon hats that profited off of 9/11 in 2001 to 42 accusations of sexual harassment to sexual misconduct that he settled out of court. The list goes on and on. Those are just three things. Why don't they want him out? Like, I know that there's been this excuse, oh, it'll open up shop and people will have to look at in their own houses about what other owners are doing. No one can be that bad.
Yeah. On top of
this is such a unique precedent.
On top of all the more important misconduct things, he's been unable to get a stadium built, which matters to these teams. Yeah. And he's also been unable to put a successful product in one of the most lucrative locations in the country, which hurts everybody else's revenue. If they could play better, they could. So like the Jaguars being great, I don't make much money for everyone else. Washington Commanders being great, that puts a lot more money for them all in the coffers. Okay. All that aside, I think the setting a precedent is part of it too, but they are people and they have a relationship with this guy. They're in a club. It's only 31 of them. They know each other and they have friendships and relationships. I think it's hard to spin that to then vote somebody out, but it gets a lot easier when sponsors get upset. And that's what moves them. As uncomfortable as it is, I don't believe that the stories about sexual misconduct and sexual harassment, I don't think that moves them to act. It should, but it doesn't. What moves them is if we, as a fan base, turn on them, which will lead sponsors to not want to be associated with them. Like, that's the defense in the negotiations that I had with the league. CBA negotiations, that was the big sticking point when we're talking about commissioner discipline, is the real argument that they were making is it hurts the way we are all perceived, which then hurts the amount of money we can make because no one wants to be associated with a league of air quote thugs. And it's like we had a couple guys getting in trouble every now and then, which obviously we all know that athletes get in trouble at a lower percentage than like the general public for their age group, but it's much higher profile. So, and then you get the idea that this league is a bad league, and then it makes it harder for them to sell things that impacts all of us. The odd thing about this and the several owners that have had issues is no one seems to care about how it makes the league look, you know, and no sponsors are willing to. We saw with the Suns, the PayPal, was it right? They like put their sponsorship on the line because they didn't want to be associated with it. And I think that had as much to do with them pushing out Sarver as anything. So I think then FedEx at one point had an issue with Dan Snyder, and that's the type
he
of
just
stuff
that, bought him out. Yeah. He bought out the minority owners and it was the whole team now.
Yeah. That's the type of stuff that matters. And then if you buy them out, it doesn't matter. But yeah, I think that's what it comes down to, is they care about what it means to them. And when there's an opportunity to increase their franchise value, they're going to take it. And we can't expect them to be kind of guided by the morals that we believe they should be guided by.
But to be the only thing I push back on, it has affected the fan base. You and I both live here.
Right.
No one likes the team. Like, we begrudgingly are like, oh, it's on TV. And like we historically like the team. No one wants to go to FedEx. No one wants to root for this team. From everything from the team naming process to the way it's been managed, it's like a farce and a joke and embarrassing. And this is like a city that, you know, as recently as 10 years ago with RG3, like any glimmer of hope, we will be obsessed with the team.
Yeah, I mean, DC is known as the Chocolate City. It's a lot less black than it once was. But there's always been a tension between the Washington football team and the black residents because they were one of the last teams to integrate and they had like an openly racist owner. And that's why you end up, if you come here, you'll see like a lot of Cowboys fans. And
so many.
Because the Cowboys had black players and they would come to town and whoop Washington's ass, and the black people in the city appreciated that. And so that's the foundation of a very black city not supporting this team to start with. And then you go from that to all this other failure and them doing all these embarrassing things going forward and reckless things. It's hard to get behind them and not winning. You had Doug Williams, which win a Super Bowl, which I guess helped in some ways, and RG3 comes about and plays well, helps in some ways, but they can't have anything sustained and nothing worth holding on to, and you don't want to be associated with it. And the in-game experience stinks. Like, the stadium's not in Washington. The stadium is hard to get to and get out of. This is all like in the weeds of Washington sports culture, but all that matters to the fan base around here. And you're right. Whoever gets it next, the sky's the limit, because the place, it's a very wealthy area and an important area and a team with some history that should matter. So I still don't think anything happens, because they're in a club. It's a club. And you know how people are with the people who are like them in a club. They rally around them, and you're going to have to get them to like literally sell him out. And if the number is big enough, I think they'll do it.
That's sort of how I feel too. I mean, as fired up as I was, like, let us know when he actually starts the process of selling the team.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/DF today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DF.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, is it homework time?
Yeah, it's homework time.
You gave me the homework assignment of like explaining Amara St. Brown. And so I looked into it, watched all of his targets and receptions, and he's third in the league in targets, he has the third most targets in the league, which is crazy. Fourth most receptions, second most touchdowns. He's a fourth round pick out of USC. He's not supposed to have numbers like that. So I watched what was going on, and I really wanted to see him just be a dominant presence. That's not what I saw. I wanted to see like the second coming of another great, great wide receiver. And maybe he'll turn into that, but that's not what I saw. I saw him finding holes in zones, which is good, and working out of the slot mostly, which in the slot you deal with a nickel corner or linebackers when you're in zone and stuff like that. It's not the best corner. You rarely get pressed, which is really hard. And I looked up the numbers. All right. So in the slot, he had 14 receptions on 20 targets, 111 yards. When he's not in the slot, he had 9 receptions off of 13 targets and 142 yards. And I was like, oh, I'm wrong. He's not dominating in a slot. He's doing it everywhere. No, then I watched all the plays and saw that when he wasn't in the slot, he was on the outside, but he was in stacks and bunches, which is, it gives you the same benefit. And he ends up motioning or running his route in the slot again also. So I don't mean this to say that he's bad. He's great. And it's clear that Jared Goff and the Lions believe in him, because he has 33 targets, by far the most on that team. That's not going to stop. That's not going to change. So from a fantasy standpoint, yeah, more power to you. But if you think that he's like a true number one receiver that they found in the fourth round, I haven't seen that yet. He's not seeing those type of coverages, and he won't. If you're in the slot, you have a two-way go. it's just a lot easier for a receiver to work in the slot than it is anywhere else. And that's where Cooper Kupp makes his money. So maybe he can grow into something like Cooper Kupp. I don't mean it as a slight, but he's not like Devontae. He's not Chase. He's not any of these guys. He's putting up numbers that are similar to them, but he's doing it in a way that that nothing that he has done is like mind-blowing and impressive, which doesn't mean that he can't be effective long range. I guess the one thing I'll point to that I thought that I saw a couple times that was kind of special for a guy of his size is these like contested catches. He was making some contested catches that I thought were impressive. And he also shows an understanding for a game, for the game, that is rare for a young receiver, and finding the holes in the zone and being like quarterback friendly. So he is a very good player, a great find for the fourth round, but you're tripping if you think that he's the same as some of those other guys that are at the top of the receiving numbers.
So can you explain why it's less impressive to get those numbers from the slot? Why aren't numbers just numbers? And why aren't numbers looked at, especially when you're doing it with Jared Goff?
Yeah, and Jared Goff hasn't been terrible.
He's been solid.
So it's a shorter, easier throw. The number one corners are normally on the outside. So you're getting normally the third corner is in the slot. And some teams will put, when they go nickel, they'll put one of their top corners, their first or second corner, in the slot also. But generally, you're not putting your best corner in there. And one of the few advantages you have as a corner when you're on the outside is you can press, get physical on them, and you also have the field reduced. But when you're in the slot, you can go anywhere. Like, you can run in just as far in as you can out. And it's a lot more ground to cover, and you rarely get pressed because you're off the line and you're motioning and those sorts of things. So it's a little bit easier in the slot, and that's where Cooper Kupp eats. That's why, even though Cooper Kupp puts up big numbers, no one's going to call him the best receiver in football, because he's not doing it in the ways that other people are doing it in, because he's white, and that doesn't help him either. Nobody wants to accept that a white man can be the best receiver in football, which is fun and funny, but also it's true to say. Yeah, I mean, it's fair to point out that it's easier to do it from the slot than it is elsewhere. And you'll see, like, some of the top receivers. You saw Justin Jefferson, a lot of his plays, they'll motion him down to the slot. Obviously, he's comfortable at a true number one as an X, whatever. But also, yeah, you put people in the slot, it makes it easier to work.
Got it.
Good enough answer. So, yeah, get him on your franchise team. But I don't know if you want him to be your team's number one receiver.
That's actually... I'm fascinated by this, because I think the narrative surrounding him is completely opposite online. When people who don't understand the game as much look at the raw numbers and look at the touchdowns that pop up on Renzo channel and the big plays.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I said franchise, get him on your fantasy team, but and maybe he'll grow into it and he'll make me look wrong like Josh Allen did, but I don't see him as a true number one in his career, which is fine. He's a fourth round pick. Turn into like... Yeah. A number one target from the slot is plenty. That's good.
Should we run through our bets really quick to close this out?
How much money did we make these people this week?
We went 4-3. So a little bit when you take the juice off of it.
Okay.
But we hit on Kyle Pitts going over 46.5 yards.
That was all you.
Pat ourselves on the back. All right. We hit on Justin Fields under 182.5 yards.
Layup.
Yep. We lost on Colts Chiefs. We took the Chiefs -5.5. And you know what? I still think we were right in process on that one.
We were right. I mean, there was no way to predict the special teams having a muff punt, a punt down at the one, a missed field goal, and a fake field goal that failed. That's not our fault. I blame them. All right, let's go talk to my wife. All right, back by popular demand. It's everyone's favorite Foxworth and the Roses and Thorns segment. My wife, Ashley.
It's not popular demand. It's your fear of firing me from my 10 minutes. Like, it's going to be really awkward, guys. And suddenly he's like, you know what? I don't have the 10 minutes to spare on my podcast. You've got to go.
People actually.
I told him it'll be fine. Like, I'll be fine with it.
People actually really do love you. And you bring great color, great sweater. Nice.
Thank you.
And...
Thank you. Thank you. I like
giving people more than they deserve, honestly, on this podcast right now. But
you give less.
They get more than they deserve from me too. It's free.
I mean, you give less aesthetically. Look at you wear white t-shirts, yeah. And
that's not why people come here for me. I'm not cute.
Okay, I know. It's podcast. People don't come. I'm just saying. Did you want to say I was giving more? I'm saying you're giving less. But that's neither here nor there.
Anyway, that's one of the many differences in us. Another one that is very clear. I was listening to a podcast this weekend about a crisis in masculinity, which was, I listened to a lot of podcasts, and this one I found interesting because, I mean, it was talking about politics and how it impacts all that and how it creates an opportunity for men to like galvanize around problematic views of masculinity. But one of the segments of the podcast, they talked about like the history, or at least one of the segments of the podcast talked about how women are generally much more successful in school, and traditionally women are marry like across and up as far as like success is concerned, and that's changing a lot.
It's like the top tier now.
It's changing a lot. And women are starting to marry across and down, or at least have not get married at all, have relationships across and down. And then they talked about how in Black households, this is not a new phenomenon. The tradition has like often been women are more accomplished academically and often in many cases more successful professionally than their counterparts. And it made me think of us, because you are by far way smarter than me. And it doesn't make me.
I'm much better educated than him, but I love him anyway. I
mean, you're actually.
But I let you be more successful.
Actually, you're not better educated than me.
Yes, I am. Formally.
I mean, all right.
We're not going to get into this. No, we're not going to know. Okay, we're not.
I take it back.
I let you be more successful. I'm so kind that I don't want to make him feel bad. So I just let him go out here and get all these jobs and be really successful to feed into his like whatever toxic masculinity ideas.
I don't think that idea is toxic. That particular portion of masculinity, like the desire to like hunt, you know, like,
because generally it was saying it was a problem, like the podcast was saying it's a problem for women, or it's all fine.
Was saying that a lot of masculinity gets put into this toxic masculinity framework when some like traditional forms of masculinity are not necessarily toxic. And at least maybe this is me defending myself, the like desire to go out and like work and do like that doesn't feel like a toxic.
No, it's definitely not. No. I was just playing.
I know. I know you don't think.
I wasn't playing that. I feel like it's a good balance, because at least like something similar to this that I've read talked about how like it kind of strains the relationship when the woman is sometimes, and it shouldn't. I'm not saying it should, but I've read something that said that.
That was
so
a white person.
Because I'm more educated, I let you be more successful. You are welcome. It is a gift that I have decided not to go out and use all of my knowledge to improve the world or build a $1 billion empire.
I know you are being like kind of sarcastic, but like in actuality, like you, if you actually wanted to, you would be a lot more. Anyway, it's a whole nother thing. Like I would not be capable of doing the things that you do nearly as well as I think you would be. Like you obviously are very educated and smart and charismatic and attractive. You would have success in the professional world if you wanted to. I wish you would. Then I would go home and take a nap every now and then.
You could retire.
Yeah, just chill out.
But here's the thing. When we first started dating, that was a long time ago. When we were first married and we had our first kid, I was finishing law school at the time and studying for the bar. And he was like seeing the end of his NFL career, like realizing like, I'm not going to do this much longer. He swore he was going to be a stay-at-home dad. Y'all. That is, and I was raised by two parents who both do the same thing. Like my mother works just as hard and is just as educated as my dad. And she also raised four children while doing this job. Like she's a superhero. And I know plenty of other women like that. And it wasn't that she was like the breadwinner. Both of my parents, like I said, they're both doctors. They both did the same thing. But I never thought that I wouldn't work. So like at the time I'm in law school, like busting my butt with our newborn and envisioning like, and I knew I didn't have to have like a super lucrative job because we were really great. I was, you know, lucky and he had worked hard and, you know, had money from football. But I just thought I was going to go out and change the world. And then And he said he was going to be the stay-at-home dad. And not that there needs to be a stay-at-home parent, but that was the way we kind of envisioned our future. And then I kind of started liking being with my kids. And we moved, and I wasn't barred in all the places we moved. And now, what are we now, 12 years later, here I am. I do some pro bono stuff, but generally not working and showing up for 12 minutes on his podcast.
I remember when we first started dating, and the fact that you were going to a fancy law school and were really smart was like really attractive to me. And I had like envisioned some idea of the future where I could be like make money, whatever, be done, be a stay at home dad. And then you like jump into some high powered legal career. And that's what I thought I wanted. And then I tore my ACL and you were studying for the bar, and I was essentially a stay-at-home dad with one child. And I was like,
a sweet baby.
Yeah, she was the easiest.
A sweet, perfect baby.
She was the easiest baby. And I was miserable because whatever, yes. And maybe this is a masculine trait or maybe it's not. I don't know what it is, but I have it. I got to compete. Like, I got to do something. And like trying to get my baby to walk at 6 months is not a good outlet.
She did walk at 9, though. She walked at 9. And remember, your teammate was there to see you. You were like, look at that. Mind you, I also walked at 9 months. She got it from me, probably not from you, but that's okay.
All the goals that she scores in soccer every weekend, not from you.
I played soccer from 4th through 8th grade. And honestly, I don't think I ever scored one goal in the whole time. And like, we go to our daughter's games and she gets like 2 and 3 goals a game. I'm like, damn, like I never got a lot. It's not for me.
Well, she can loan you a couple. All right, that was a lot of preamble.
I know, that's
to the roses and thorns. The
okay,
concept,
sorry. You can cut it out, guys.
Is I spend a lot of time critiquing other people, so I wanted to bring in the only boss that I care about that can give me my performance review. So let me know.
I need you to care about other bosses though, too. Remember,
I don't care about that. I only care about making them happy, because I know that I can't come home if them checks don't keep showing up.
Shut up. Anyway, roses. Okay. Look behind him. If you're looking, there are some things up there. He stole a pile of kids' artwork that I plan to put somewhere else and put it up behind him. Now, I still have critiques. I'll do some early thorns. It's on a weird angle. I say it, center it. It's like not really filled in, but he made an attempt. Yay, rose, flowers for you. Another rose, actually, I just thought about this. I hear a toilet running. Yeah, I hear the toilet running near here, and you're going to need to fix that. He has gotten to be guy such a good plumber.
Oh, you're talking about fixing pipes? My bad.
Garbage disposals, drains, toilets. And we have some really tricky, like our house has like a mix of like old and new stuff. And so some of it's just a little finicky.
Some of it's
and
like
hard
French,
to...
which I don't understand.
Yeah, it's like from all these other places. And I'm like, can you just bring me Kohler? Give me the good American stuff. But anyway, he's gotten so good at fixing things. Like, I kind of feel bad because I know he's busy, but I'm like, oh, we need to clear these drains. We need to fix this toilet for money. Now you need to fix this hall toilet for money, babe. But that is great. When we first got married, I was very concerned. Not concerned, because I was like, that's what you hire a handyman for. He was not the most handy person. But I don't know what's changed. Like, you've gotten just YouTube videos. You've gotten, have you noticed that about yourself? Before, I'd be like, it's okay. We'll call my dad or we'll call my little brother. They'll figure it out now.
Yeah. I mean, it's YouTube and
just necessity.
And also, it's nothing sexier than a man that can fix stuff. So I gotta stay hot. I don't
let me tell
I
you.
You.
Let
I don't
me
want
tell
you to leave me for a handyman. I don't know. You could afford to pay somebody to fix it was the general philosophy, but then you feel like you are getting ripped off, and also not only ripped off, like stuff don't get fixed fast enough.
You have to wait.
Yeah,
I
think that's the more impetus more than anything is like, I have YouTube. I think I'm smart enough to understand it and I'll try. I've failed in the past, and then we have to come get somebody to come in behind and fix it. But like, I don't know, we'll figure it out. But yeah, I'm proud of my.
This might be TMI.
Work.
But the real impetus is we have separate bathrooms at our house. And like, honestly, now every time I think I want to move, I'm like, but do I have my own bathroom? Because I never want to go back to sharing with him. So we have separate showers and separate toilets. And anytime my shower drain, me and my daughter both have way too much hair, my oldest. So my drain from washing gets like clogged. Anytime it's clogged, I'm like, it's okay. We'll just go to your shower. Or like when my toilet wasn't working, I was like, oh, the plumber can probably come in a week. He's like, no. You will not share my shower. You will not ruin my drain too. I do not want you pooping in my toilet. Like, he is like, you get your butt back in your bathroom, and he fixes it. And I'm like, no, babe, don't worry. And I know that really he's gonna, I'm like, it's fine. I'll just use yours. It's right next to mine. And then
he
fixes it.
I didn't realize I was
so
being manipulated, but I'm fine with it. It's okay. All right.
He is because he doesn't want to share with me. Thorns. I'm sorry. They can edit. Just edit out. Edit
out. Nothing to edit. Let it ride. Oh.
Thorns, that you stole the art, to reiterate. But then also, and I thought of this when you were talking about the podcast earlier. Okay. So he's super knowledgeable because he always listens to podcasts. I literally have only listened to Serial, which I heard is like was scripted and not like what other podcasts are like. That's the only podcast I've ever listened to, which you might be able to tell because I don't really know what I'm doing here. But he's always got at least one AirPod in his ear. And often it's annoyingly one AirPod. So like I see the free ear and I'm like, oh, he's listening to me. And then I realize as like I'm looking at him and see him not responding or to the children sometimes that I'm like, he cannot hear us because he's freaking. I didn't curse. I'm getting better at this podcasting thing. He has an AirPod in the other ear. He's like constantly listening to podcasts. Like even at night, he has one in and is listening. And sometimes I guess AirPods shouldn't do this, but I guess it probably slips or turns on an angle that I can hear it a little bit through his single AirPod. I think the time it irritates me most is when we're in the car. And so if he's driving and I'm on the passenger side, he has the left AirPod in. So I'm talking to him, I see the free right ear and I'm just talking and blah, blah, blah. And then eventually I realized that I have been like lied to, basically, is what I feel like this whole time, because he's like, it's made me hate AirPods, like to the point that I imagine if there were, I'm sure I would feel differently. But if there was like, if he had a mistress or an emotional affair with somebody, I feel like that's how I feel about the AirPod, like that he's having this emotional affair, not physical.
No such thing.
Okay, I probably not. You're right. But that in my mind, like when he says he loses an AirPod, I'm like, I'm never gonna help him find it. Then he'll just go buy more. But like, I want to take them and toss them, except for I know he's bought so many pairs. He's just going to keep buying more pairs. But I effing hate AirPods. You see me with my old school wired headphones because I just have a thing about AirPods. I like refuse. And it's all because of
all right, well, I mean, if I'll stop using the AirPods and I'll just keep a wired one in all the time. I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, I'll correct this.
The AirPod just makes it so easy.
I will correct this.
You don't have to correct it. It makes you so knowledgeable.
No. I'm going to stop the AirPod habit and pick up a cocaine habit. That's my new habit.
Well, exactly. You choose.
Smoking make rocks, your choices. Baby.
I'll stick with the AirPods. Well,
I love you too.
Bye.
Bye. We're up in the same house. What do you mean bye?
Was that? Well, I mean, we're hanging out the thing and you're going to keep working because we need you to keep working.
I guess that's fair. All right. Love you.
I'm going to go plant some plants outside or some shit, whatever I'm supposed to do now. Bye.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. More importantly, thank my team for making this thing great. Charlie, you're the man. Addie Kahn, I appreciate you. Sarah Abbott, the greatest poet I know, and Christina Buswell. Appreciate all of you guys.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.